Music. The entrance hall overflowed with coats of both sexes. From the drawing room came a rapid succession of piano notes. Victor's reflection in the hall mirror straightened the knot of a reflected tie. Straining to reach up, the maid hung his overcoat, but it broke loose, taking down two others with it, and she had to begin all over again. Already walking on tiptoe, Victor reached the drawing room, whereupon the music at once became louder and manlier. At the piano sat Wolf, a rare guest in that house. The rest, some 30 people in all, were listening in a variety of attitudes, some with chin propped on fist, others sending cigarette smoke up toward the ceiling, and the uncertain lighting lent a vaguely picturesque quality to their immobility. From afar, the lady of the house, with an eloquent smile, indicated to Victor an unoccupied seat, a pretzel-backed little armchair almost in the shadow of the grand piano. He responded with self-effacing gestures, "It's all right. It's all right. I can stand." Presently, however, he began moving in the suggested direction, cautiously sat down, and cautiously folded his arms. The performer's wife, her mouth half open, her eyes blinking fast, was about to turn the page. Now she has turned it. A black forest of ascending notes, a slope, a gap, then a separate group of little trapezists in flight. Wolf had long fair eyelashes, his translucent ears were of a delicate crimson hue. He struck the keys with extraordinary velocity and vigor, and in the lacquered depths of the open keyboard lid, the doubles of his hands were engaged in a ghostly, intricate, even somewhat clownish mimicry. To Victor, any music he did not know, and all he knew was a dozen conventional tunes, could be likened to the patter of a conversation in a strange tongue. In vain you strive to define at least the limits of the words, but everything slips and merges, so that the laggard ear begins to feel boredom. Victor tried to concentrate on listening, but soon caught himself watching Wolf's hands and their spectral reflections. When the sounds grew into insistent thunder, the performer's neck would swell. His widespread fingers tensed, and he emitted a faint grunt. At one point his wife got ahead of him. He arrested the page with an instant slap of his open left palm, then with incredible speed himself flipped it over, and already both hands were fiercely kneading the compliant keyboard again. Victor made a detailed study of the man, sharp-tipped nose, jutting eyelids, scar left by a boil on his neck, hair resembling blonde fluff, broad-shouldered, cut of black jacket. For a moment Victor tried to attend to the music again, but scarcely had he focused on it when his attention dissolved. He slowly turned away, fishing out his cigarette case, and began to examine the other guests. Among the strange faces he discovered some familiar ones. Nice, chubby Kucharovsky, over there. Should I nod to him? He did, but overshot his mark. It was another acquaintance, Shmakov, who acknowledged the nod. I heard he was leaving Berlin for Paris. Must ask him about it. On a divan, flanked by two elderly ladies, corpulent, red-haired Anna Semolovna, half-reclined with closed eyes, while her husband, a throat specialist, sat with his elbows propped on the arm of his chair. What is that glittering object he twirls in the fingers of his free hand? Ah, yes, a pince-nez on a Chekhovian ribbon. Further, one shoulder in shadow, a hunchbacked bearded man known to be a lover of music listened intently, an index finger stretched up against his temple. Victor could never remember his name and patronymic. Boris? No, that wasn't it. Borisovich? Not that either. More faces. Wonder if the Harusians are here. Yes, there they are, not looking my way. And in the next instant, immediately behind them, Victor saw his former wife. At once he lowered his gaze, automatically tapping his cigarette to dislodge the ash that had not yet had time to form. From somewhere low down, his heart rose like a fist to deliver an uppercut, drew back, struck again, then went into a fast, disorderly throb, contradicting the music and drowning it. Not knowing which way to look, he glanced askance at the pianist, but did not hear a sound. Wolf seemed to be pounding a silent keyboard. Victor's chest got so constricted that he had to straighten up and draw a deep breath. Then, hastening back from a great distance, gasping for air, the music returned to life, and his heart resumed beating with a more regular rhythm. They had separated 2 years before, in another town, where the sea boomed at night, and where they had lived since their marriage. With his eyes still cast down, he tried to ward off the thunder and rush of the past with trivial thoughts. For instance, that she must have observed him a few moments ago, as with long, noiseless, bobbing strides he had tiptoed the whole length of the room to reach this chair. It was as if someone had caught him undressed or engaged in some idiotic occupation, and, while recalling how in his innocence he had glided and plunged under her gaze, hostile, derisive, curious, he interrupted himself to consider if his hostess or anyone else in the room might be aware of the situation, and how had she got here, and whether she had come alone or with her new husband, and what he, Victor, ought to do. Stay as he was, or look her way? No, looking was still impossible. First he had to get used to her presence in this large but confining room, for the music had fenced them in, and had become for them a kind of prison, where they were both fated to remain captive until the pianist ceased constructing and keeping up his vaults of sound. What had he had time to observe in that brief glance of recognition a moment ago? So little. Her averted eyes, her pale cheek, a lock of black hair, and, as a vague secondary character, beads or something around her neck. So little. Yet that careless sketch, that half-finished image, already was his wife, and its momentary blend of gleam and shade already formed the unique entity which bore her name. How long ago it all seemed! He had fallen madly in love with her one sultry evening under a swooning sky on the terrace of the tennis club pavilion, and a month later, on their wedding night, it rained so hard you could not hear the sea. What bliss it had been! Bliss! What a moist, lapping, and plashing word, so alive, so tame, smiling and crying all by itself. And the morning after, those glistening leaves in the garden, that almost noiseless sea, that languid, milky, silvery sea. Something had to be done about his cigarette butt. He turned his head, and again his heart missed a beat. Someone had stirred, blocking his view of her almost totally, and was taking out a handkerchief as white as death. But presently the stranger's elbow would go, and she would reappear. Yes, in a moment she would reappear. No, I can't bear to look. There's an ashtray on the piano. The barrier of sounds remained just as high and impenetrable. The spectral hands in their lacquered depths continued to go through the same contortions. We'll be happy forever. What melody in that phrase, what shimmer! She was velvet soft all over. One longed to gather her up the way one would gather up a foal and its folded legs. Embrace her and fold her. And then what? What could one do to possess her completely? I love your liver, your kidneys, your blood cells. To this she would reply, don't be disgusting. They lived neither in luxury nor in poverty, and went swimming in the sea almost all year round. The jellyfish, washed up onto the shingly beach, trembled in the wind. The Crimean cliffs glistened in the spray. Once they saw fishermen carrying away the body of a drowned man. His bare feet protruding from under the blanket looked surprised. In the evenings, she used to make cocoa. He looked again. She was now sitting with downcast eyes, legs crossed, chin propped upon knuckles. She was very musical. Wolf must be playing some famous, beautiful piece. I won't be able to sleep for several nights, thought Victor as he contemplated her white neck and the soft angle of her knee. She wore a flimsy black dress, unfamiliar to him, and her necklace kept catching the light. No, I won't be able to sleep, and I shall have to stop coming here. It has all been in vain. 2 years of straining and struggling, my peace of mind almost regained. Now I must start all over again, trying to forget everything, everything that had already been almost forgotten, plus this evening on top of it. It suddenly seemed to him that she was looking at him furtively, and he turned away. The music must be drawing to a close. When they come, those stormy, gasping chords, it usually signifies that the end is near. Another intriguing word, end, rend, impend. Thunder rending the sky, dust clouds of impending doom. With the coming of spring, she became strangely unresponsive. She spoke almost without moving her lips. He would ask, "What is the matter with you?" "Nothing, nothing in particular." Sometimes she would stare at him out of narrowed eyes, with an enigmatic expression. "What is the matter?" "Nothing." By nightfall, she would be as good as dead. You cannot do anything with her, for despite her being a small, slender woman, she would grow heavy and unwieldy, and as if made of stone. "Won't you finally tell me what is the matter with you?" So it went for almost a month. Then one evening, yes, it was the morning of her birthday, she said quite simply, as if she were talking about some trifle, "Let's separate for a while. We can't go on like this." The neighbor's little daughter burst into the room to show her kitten, the sole survivor of a litter that had been drowned. "Go away, go away, later." The little girl left. There was a long silence. After a while, slowly, silently, he began twisting her wrists. He longed to break all of her, to dislocate all her joints with loud cracks. She started to cry. Then he sat down at the table and pretended to read the newspaper. She went out into the garden but soon returned. "I can't keep it back any longer. I have to tell you everything." And with an odd astonishment, as if discussing another woman, and being astonished at her, and inviting him to share her astonishment, she told it all. The man in question was a burly, modest, and reserved fellow. He used to come for a game of whist, and liked to talk about artesian wells. The first time had been in the park, then at his place. "The rest is all very vague. I pace the beach till nightfall. Yes, the music does seem to be ending. When I slapped his face on the key, he said, 'You'll pay dearly for this,' picked up his cap from the ground and walked away. I did not say goodbye to her. How silly it would have been to think of killing her. Live on, live. Live as you are living now, as you are sitting now. Sit like that forever. Come, look at me, I implore you. Please, please, look. I'll forgive you everything, because someday we must all die, and then we shall know everything, and everything will be forgiven. So why put it off? Look at me, look at me. Turn your eyes, my darling eyes. No. Finished.'" The last many clawed ponderous chords, another, and just enough breath left for one more, and after this concluding chord, with which the music seemed to have surrendered its soul entirely, the performer took aim and, with feline precision, struck one simple, quite separate little golden note. The musical barrier dissolved. Applause. Wolf said, "It's been a very long time since I last played this." Wolf's wife said, "It's been a long time, you know, since my husband last played this piece." Advancing upon him, crowding him, nudging him with his paunch, the throat specialist said to Wolf, "Marvelous! I have always maintained that's the best thing he ever wrote. I think that toward the end you modernized the color of sound just a bit too much. I don't know if I make myself clear, but you see..." Victor was looking in the direction of the door. There, a slightly built, black-haired lady with a helpless smile was taking leave of the hostess, who kept exclaiming in surprise, "I won't hear of it! We're all going to have tea now, and then we're going to hear a singer!" But she kept on smiling helplessly and made her way to the door, and Victor realized that the music, which before had seemed a narrow dungeon where, shackled together by the resonant sounds, they had been compelled to sit face to face, some 20 feet apart, had actually been incredible bliss. a magic glass dome that had embraced and imprisoned him and her, had made it possible for him to breathe the same air as she, and now everything had been broken and scattered. She was disappearing through the door. Wolf had shut the piano, and the enchanting captivity could not be restored. She left. Nobody seemed to have noticed anything. He was greeted by a man named Boak, who said in a gentle voice, "I kept watching you. What a reaction to music. You know, you looked so bored I felt sorry for you. Is it possible that you are so completely indifferent to it?"
"Why, no, I wasn't bored," Victor answered awkwardly. "It's just that I have no ear for music, and that makes me a poor judge. By the way, what was it he played?"
"What do you will?" said Boak, in the apprehensive whisper of a rank outsider. "A Maiden's Prayer, or the Kreutzer Sonata?"
"Whatever you will.